what's left of Sonny, see? I'm Sonny and I'm an alcoholic. And I love drugs. And, you know, Jesus Christ, man. Ain't nothing to do in Phoenix on Saturday night? Yeah, this is coming to any lengths. You know, I'm grateful for the committee who selected me to come here and speak to you people tonight. It's good to be any goddamn where clean and sober and in my right mind most of the time. I know I'm in my right mind today because I stood outside and watched them people get in that dunk tank. And it wasn't me. Okay. And a friend told me that he thought the second step had taken effect. And I said, no, it said it could. It didn't say it would. And, you know, I watched them people out there freezing to death, man, busting their ass in that tank. And I thought, God, I'm so glad I don't do that shit no more. Yeah. It's good not to be a newcomer. After you get some time in this program, you just step aside and let the newcomers do all that ignorant shit. And I want to tell you that when I was out there on the streets doing my thing, nobody ever came up to me and said, Sonny, don't use drugs, just drink alcohol, because one of these days you're going to be in AA and you can't talk about drugs. Nobody ever said that to me. Nobody ever said, Sonny, just use drugs, because one of these days you're going to be in NA or CA or Overeaters, Little Peters or something, and you can't talk about alcohol. Well, I'm going to tell you, I did every goddamn thing that worked out there, and some that didn't. Some that didn't. I'm not a cocaine freak or cocaine addict. When I first used cocaine, it was something new, and they said, Sonny, try this shit. They had a whole pile of it on a table, and I stuck a goddamn straw down there and sucked it up one nostril and sucked it up the other nostril, and it burnt like shit. And it lasted about 15 minutes, and I had to go do it again. And I said, fuck this. I went and got me some crank. You don't have to do that every 15 minutes. Now, I want to tell you that if I had stayed with it long enough to where you smoked it and fixed it and stuffed it up your ass and done all that other shit with it, I'd have probably been there. See? Because I would do anything. If somebody walked up to me and said, Sonny, here's a Hershey bar with almonds. If you stuff it up your ass, you'll get loaded. I'd have been stuffing a Hershey bar up my ass. The almonds might have hurt, but... when I got here today, I found out that one of the guys that I used to sponsor was over here talking to you a couple years ago, a guy named Rashad. And Rashad was one of the craziest babies I ever had. I knew Rashad in a joint, and or what do you call them places?
Correctional
facility. Well, I was there as fucking penitentiaries. And, you know, he was the only... white guy I knew that was crazy. Just totally fucking nuts. He joined the black Muslims while he was in the joint. And he's white. I saw him at Tehachapi when I went up there on a panel. And I said, hey, Patrick, how you doing? He said, no, cool it, man. My name ain't Patrick no more. I said, oh, you changed it? What is it? He said, it's Rashad. I said, you're an ignorant son of a bitch, boy. You know. But you know, he's out doing great today, and so am I. And it ain't about none of that shit no more. See? I'd like to tell you that my life out here has been a bed of roses. And it has been compared to what it was in there. Yeah. I haven't had a bad day, period. Since I've been sober and clean, I haven't had a bad day. Somebody asked me one day a couple years ago, they said, Sonny, what was your drug of choice? I said, drug of choice? They said, yeah. I said, I don't know. I didn't know you could specialize in any goddamn thing. But if I had a drug of choice, it would have probably been yours. See? Because I always wanted yours, and I wanted to save mine. See? I don't know where you came from, but that's how I grew up. I remember we used to rob them doctor's cars, because back in them days they had them doctor's bags. And we used to use everything in them bags. And I know that sooner or later in one of them bags I got a hold of some of them pregnant pills. And I took them. And I'm here to tell you that they work. I haven't been pregnant since then. I've taken a little bit of every goddamn thing. I took some shit one time and made me walk sideways, boy. Worst shit I'd ever had. Yeah. I started drinking and using when I was 8 years old. I had a school teacher turn me on. And I want to tell you that I've had a thing for school teachers ever since. The best thing that ever happened to me in my life. I used to go over on her yard, clean her yard and stuff on Saturdays. And she'd always give me 50 cents or quarter and some milk and cookies or lemonade or some shit. Whatever happened to be in style that day. And I'd get my stuff and go on home. One day I went in to get my stuff and she was sitting in there and she was half in the bag. And she was drinking whiskey and cleaning a kilo of weed. And I thought, God damn. And she said, Sonny, have you ever drank any of this stuff? She held up this bottle of whiskey, and I said, oh, yeah, we've got it at my house all the time. Now, I want to tell you, nobody at my house drank. So she said, okay, and she poured some into a water glass. And I took that water glass, and I don't know if any of you can remember your first drink, but I can't. See, because that was what set me free, you know. I had the ism of alcoholism before I ever took a drink. And I took that goddamn drink, and it was like, I just thought it would be like Kool-Aid or iced tea or lemonade or some shit, and I threw it in. And it got down into my throat about here, and it started burning. Goddamn, it burned all the way down. It got down to the bottom and started to come back up. It'd get back up to here, and I'd get it back down and come back up. And finally, I got it to stay down. And when it stayed down, it sent this warm, fuzzy feeling all over me. And I thought, son of a bitch, let me have some more. And then she asked me if I'd ever smoked any of that Mexican non-habit-forming marijuana. And I told her, no, but shit, I'm willing. Let's go for it. And she gave me some. And I spit and sputtered and gagged and choked, you know. And finally she said, wait a minute, you're just wasting that shit. Let me show you how to do it. And she did, and I got some to stay in. You know, and I sat there for a while, and I didn't feel anything, but all of a sudden, the corners of my mouth started to spread. They started going towards my ears. And I thought, God damn, this is all right. Because there wasn't a lot of shit going on in my life that was funny at that time, but it felt that way. Now, I've been in a lot of meetings, and I've heard a lot of people share that they tried marijuana and it didn't do shit for them. I feel sorry for them people. I really do. They must have been doing it wrong. At 9 years old, I was taken away from my parents, declared incorrigible. And they put me in juvenile hall. And as I was walking out of the courtroom, my parents told me, said, Sonny, don't worry, we'll be in to see you. Everything's going to be all right. And I said, all right. So I went on to juvenile hall. Sunday came around. They hadn't been there, and I was waiting. I was sitting on the edge of my bunk. 7:30 rolled around. They still hadn't came. A guy came over and sat down on my bunk and said, what's the matter? What are you doing? I said, I'm waiting for my parents to come. He said, man, you ain't got no parents no more. They done took you away from them. Ain't nobody coming to see you. And I'm 9 years old. And at 9 years old, I didn't know what the feelings and all that shit was that I was going through at the time. But today I know what it was. And I sat there and I began to cry. And I cried for about 4 hours. And in about 3 or 4 hours, these four boys that came over whooped the dog shit out of me, raped me, and left me laying there on the bed. Next morning, I got up and I was sitting on the edge of the bed. And this one guy came over and he sat down next to me and he said, "Sonny, you better do something or this is going to happen again." I said, "No, it ain't going to happen again. I don't know what the fuck's going on, but it ain't going to happen no more." And I got up and I went to the bathroom. I was on my way to the bathroom and I noticed that the utility closet was open. And I opened the door and I looked in there and there was a mop bucket. And it had a metal mop ringer and a metal handle on it. And it had two screws holding it in. And I took them screws out and come out of that closet and went up through that dorm and found them guys. And I almost killed two of them. I learned two things in that 24-hour period. One of the things that I learned was that if you cried, it was a sign of weakness and people would take advantage of it. The second thing that I learned was that the more violent you became with people, the more they left you to fuck alone. You see? They left you alone. And so that's the way it was for me for a long, long time. I grew up in the system and had that system's attitude over there. I went to Quentin on an armed robbery and got out the club I rode motorcycles with, came and picked me up, and we went to party. That was on a Tuesday. The following Monday, I came to myself, and I was in the old L.A. County Jail one more time, which didn't surprise me, but I was wondering what I was in there for because I had these funny-looking coveralls on, and I was in a tank that I'd never been in, and so I took the stainless steel cup and racked it on the bars, and the bull came down there and I asked him, "What was the problem? Why was I in here?" And he said, "Sonny, you're charged with 187 PC. That's first degree murder." And I thought, wow, what a trip. I couldn't remember it, so I didn't even think that it happened. In a blackout that weekend, I'd killed a guy in a bar. And the state of California was pressing for special circumstances. They got it all and they sentenced me to die. I spent 2.5 years on death row. At the end of 2.5 years, the U.S. Supreme Court overturned the penalty phase of my case, took me off the row, and put me out in the yard. A couple months later, when I was out in the yard, I was involved in one of them race riots, and this black guy stabbed me twice. I chased him down, and I stabbed him, and I had him by his head, and pulled back, and I was going to cut his head off, and the tower guard shot me. The next thing I remember, I was in Bus White's, and I had about 150 pounds of chain on me, and I was headed for Folsom. We pulled into the front entrance gate at Folsom, and Sallyport there, I was sitting there in this little old bus, and I was thinking, God damn, man, something reminds me. This reminds me of something. And what it was when I was 12 years old, there was a juvenile court judge that told me, he said, "Sonny, if you don't straighten your act up, you're going to wind up in Folsom one of these days." And I had laughed at him. I had laughed at him because I thought he meant then. And I knew they didn't send 12-year-olds to Folsom. But then there it was. And that should have told me something, but it didn't say anything. And I spent the next 11 years there. I'm here to tell you that I spent 25 years in prison. 25 goddamn years in prison and never learned anything. The only thing I ever got out of them 25 years was an education. The way I got the education was that a guy that ran with us on the yard went to work in the education department. And he came down and told me, he said, "Sonny, didn't they tell you at the board that you needed an education?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "I can get you a high school diploma for two boxes." I said, "Cool. Okay." So I gave him two cartons of Camels and he got me a high school diploma. My grades were so good that I graduated valedictorian of that class. Now, I won't tell you, I didn't know what valedictorian was, but it sure as hell didn't sound good to me. And I went looking for this dude. And the Sacramento Bee, which is the newspaper up there at Folsom, came in to take pictures of everybody with them funny hats on and them robes. And it was a trip. And I had the guy that got me made valedictorian to make me a speech, because they said that's what I had to do. couple years later, he came out on the yard and he said, "I can get you an associate arts degree, sonny." I said, "How many boxes is that?" He said, "It's 4 boxes. I said, "Let's go." So I got an associate arts degree. And I have to laugh my ass off. I got busted and I got sent to 4A, which is a jail inside a jail. Well, I was in there. Yeah. Only in California. I was in there for 2.5 years. And while I was in there, I was in the cell down the road from me was a guy who had been a professor up at UC Berkeley. He was a psych professor. And he kept after me about getting a correspondence course. And I told him, "Why don't you do it for me?" And he said, "Really?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Okay." Well, some other words went down too. But thing was that he went ahead and done that. And when I got out of 4A, I only needed 9 units for a BA degree. You know, and it made me mad. I'd like to stuck around for another 6 months and got that BA degree. Been an educated son of a bitch. And the extent of my reading was just good enough for me to read Lewis L'Amour. That was it. The Sacketts. It's the only ones I wanted to read. And one day I was laying on my bunk. They'd shipped me from state appellate courts had reversed the... they gave me a new trial, and in the new trial they reversed the sentencing, and they took life without possibility off and gave me straight life and all that old bullshit that goes with it. And when they did, they sent me down to this place called Tehachapi. Tehachapi was one of the funniest goddamn camps I'd ever been in. You know, it was dorm living. I never lived in a dorm since I was in juvenile hall. Everybody in there had a radio or a record player, and none of them was on the same channels or the same record. It was just fucking noise. And everybody there was 87% of the guys that were there was in the joint for the first time. They reminded me of newcomers. You know what I mean? Don't really know if they belong yet or not, but got a lot of information. You know, and I'm not picking on the newcomers because I was the same goddamn way when I got here. And I thought it was the weirdest camp in the world. All these guys living in the dorm. And finally one night, this was in 1970, I think it was, 69-70. And the women was wearing them real short dresses and skirts. And this guy in the bunk next to me jumped up and started getting ready. It's about 7 o'clock at night, and he starts getting ready like he's going somewhere. And I thought, what's the son of a bitch doing, man? Ain't no place to go this time of night. And you got to clean up for it, too. You know, so I asked him, I said, "Where are you going?" He said, "I'm going over to the visiting hall. They're having winos in tonight." And I thought, I know he's snapped, man. They don't bring winos to the penitentiary. What in the hell would they be bringing winos to the penitentiary for? You know, and how did they get them? Take that bus and go down on Skid Row and pick them up and tell them you're going to the penitentiary tonight? You know, I didn't understand none of that shit. And I said, "Well, what happens over there?" And he said, "Man," he said, "they give you free coffee and cookies or donuts, and them Owanos will give you a goddamn cigarette if you get next to them." You know, and I thought, they don't sound like no Owanos I knew. They was always trying to get next to me, get something, you know. So I said, "Well, what else happens?" And he said, "Well, they bring in broads." And I said, "What?" He said, "They bring in broads." I said, "Real ones?" And he said, "Yeah." Now, I'd been down a long time. And them wheels had already run off them cars and the motorcycles and all that shit. You know, they'd had too many flats. I couldn't have been Mr. Firestone and kept them in wheels. You know what I mean? That had already stopped, and so it'd been a long time. I'd seen a lot of them could have been, would have been, and should have been, but I didn't see the real thing. And so I said, "How do I get over there?" And he said, "You just go, son." I said, no, you don't have to have a ducat or something to go. And he said, no, you just go. So I thought, shit, all right. So I put on my yard jacket and my shades.
Yeah.
Because you have to be cool. They ain't going to know who you are or what you are, man, if you ain't cool. We all know that. So I walked in there and I took a look around that room and I saw them convicts that was in there and I knew I didn't belong with these assholes. And if somebody came in and saw me with them, then I'd have to have an excuse of why I'm there. So I just took one of the metal folding chairs and moved it to the back of the room. And I figured, if anybody that knows me comes in and says anything, I'm telling them I'm just checking it out, man. And I sat down in that chair and folded that jacket over just right. Crossed my legs, looked good. Yeah. I went in to take a leak just before I come out here to speak. And I seen guys in there getting cute, getting ready. Just in case she was here tonight. And I totally understand it. Totally understand. And I sat down in that chair and I struck that pose, man. And if I'd have been any cooler that night, they'd have chipped me out of that chair with a goddamn ice pick. And I heard this commotion. And the gate flew open and these people come in and these broads was with them and they were looking good, goddamn. But after all the time I'd done, anything would look good. And there's a couple convicts standing by the gate there, and when they came in and broads was kissing on them and hugging them, and I thought, what in the fuck is this, man? Things can't be that bad out on the streets that they got to come up here to catch. Yeah. And I want to tell you that I sat back there in that chair and I fell out of that sucker 5 times that night. See? I found out you can only bend over so far and that chair gives you up. And I don't give a shit how you land on that floor. You can't look cool. There is absolutely no position that you can get in that looks cool. See? And it was a program of attraction for me then, and it still is. Still is. I don't go to men's stags. Can't stand a goddamn men's stag. I never heard of so much fucking sniveling in my life. And my sponsor told me, said, Sonny, go try one. I went for about a half an hour and left. And he said, what's the matter? I said, man, I was in this men's stag for 25 years. You know, I go to these meetings where they got women. Because what I do is if I'm sitting there and somebody's talking that I don't want to hear, you know what that is. You know how you hear those people who come to meetings and share that, and they share all that old bullshit. You know, I don't want to hear that. And so what I do is I tune them out and I look around the room to see what's happening. You know, real simple for me. I can't do that in a men's stag. Although I've seen some of them guys that go to men's stags. But I've been out of the joint a long time now. In 73, because I was going to AA so goddamn much, they thought that my life had changed and that there might be a chance of putting me out on the streets one more time. And so they paroled me. And the club I rode with came and picked me up. And 2 years later, I was on my way back. And I'll never forget the day that I knew that I was going back to the penitentiary or I was going to die. And that was the day that I couldn't shut off anything in here. And I couldn't shut this off. No matter how much I used or how much I drank. And I got to that point. I think where everybody sitting in this room, if you're an alcoholic or an addict or whatever, that every one of us gets to, and that's that point where we're just fucking tired. Just tired, man. You know, sick and tired of being sick and tired. It ain't working no more. And I finally got violated and came back to the joint, and I was down at Chino at RC West. And I went for a parole revocation hearing, and they got to talking to me so bad I just got up and walked out. I didn't care anymore. I just didn't fucking care anymore. And they could do whatever they wanted to do. And I walked out on the yard, and I was looking at the tower, and I was looking at the bull in the tower, and he was a youngster, and I knew if I hit that fucking fence, he'd blow me off the fence. And I wouldn't have to feel the way I was feeling. And that's what was going through my mind at the time. And then all of a sudden, I heard over the PA system that there was an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting in the visiting room. And I turned around and walked into that visiting room. And today I understand what it was, what was happening. My whole thought pattern was to hit that fence and get it over with. It wasn't about AA. I didn't give a fuck about AA or nothing. All I gave a fuck about was what was happening with me, man. And I wanted it to end. And somehow or another, you know, I know that God doing for me, it was doing for me that day that what I couldn't do for myself. And he turned me around and walked me into that meeting. And when I walked into that meeting, there was a little short, fat, bald-headed guy named Bill Honeycutt standing there. And he walked up and put his arms around me and told me, he said, "Welcome back. I'm not glad to see you back in the penitentiary, but I'm glad to see you back in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Maybe now you'll sit down, shut up, and listen." Yeah. And I knew it was all over for me. I knew it was all over for me, man. And they sent me back to that goddamn place called Tehachapi. And I got up there and I got involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. And on July the 1st, 1977, I stood up in front of a bunch of people just like you, only they were dressed a little funnier. And some people from the streets. And they had smuggled a cake out of the goddamn bakery. And Bill Honeycutt had brought up one of them little old chicken shit candles. And he'd stole it from somebody at a birthday meeting because it was already used. Yeah. And they stuck it in the middle of that cake and sang happy birthday to me. And I stood there and the tears rolled down my cheeks. Just rolled down my cheeks. 6 days later, I was standing out at the canteen waiting for them to open the canteen up. And they announced over the PA system for me to report to the dorm, roll my stuff up, I was going home. And I wasn't supposed to get out. I wasn't supposed to have another hearing until 1990. See? I know what it is for me today. I don't know how anybody else feels about this program. How you feel about any goddamn thing. I want to tell you about how I feel about it. I think that the day that I walked out of prison was the day that the old Sonny died. And the day that I came out here into this world, a new Sonny was born. And everything that I have today and everything that I am today is a gift from God and the program. That's what it is. It ain't nothing I deserve. I was talking with my friend here and I said, well, I was at a meeting and this guy sitting next to me, he was sharing and he said, he's just waiting for when he gets what he deserves. And I got up and moved. They said, "Sonny, why did you move?" I said, God might give it to him. And I don't want to be in, you know, I don't want to be in the fallout of it. You know? But when they told me to report to the dorm and roll my stuff up, I was going home. I was scared. And when I get scared, I get crazy. And I went up there and I told this bull, I said, "If you're fucking with me, man, I'm gonna just do you right here." And he said, "Sonny, they've been trying to tell you since January that there was a chance that you'd go home." In January of 1977, Governor Brown at that time over in California signed a new law, which was called SB 42 or some fucking thing. I don't know. It's been so long now, I ain't paid no attention to it. Anyway, what it did was it overhauled the judicial system. It took the adult authority out of power. Put the power back into the judges and all that shit, and they had to write new laws, sentencing laws and stuff. And when they got done doing all that, they had to review everybody's case that was in the penitentiary. And when they reviewed mine, under the new laws, I'd done 4.5 years too much. And I had to be released immediately. So on 7-7-77, I walked out of the penitentiary for the last time. Yeah, and it don't work anywhere. It don't work in Vegas. It don't work on the lotto or none of that shit. It just worked that one day. And I'm thankful to God for that day. You know, and when I went out and I sat out in the entrance building and was waiting to see what was going to happen, I had no idea where I was going to go, what I was going to do, or any goddamn thing else. And I was standing there and I got to shaking, so I sat down. And I still got to shaking so bad that finally I sat on my hands. And I was sweating like a son of a bitch. And finally I said, man, I don't know if I can handle this. There was a telephone right outside the entrance building. And I had money in my pocket. I could go out there and use that phone. But I didn't know who I wanted to call. Yeah. And all of a sudden this lieutenant walked in and he said, Sonny. And I said, what? And he said, this guy coming across the parking lot is coming for you. And I said, what makes you think so? He said, because he's the only asshole we've seen all day that looks like you. You know? And I looked out there, and here come this guy. He had long hair and a big beard, and his name was Carl Dake. He was a clean and sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous out of Bakersfield. And he walked in there in that room, and he threw his arm around me and told me, come on, asshole, you don't live here no more. Let's get out of here. I thought, all right. When I walked out of the penitentiary that day, the clothes I had on my back, $200 worth of state check, kickout money, and a few other dollars that I had in my pocket, and a shoebox was all I had. So all I came out here to you people with. We got into Bakersfield, and he said, I'm going to take you to a meeting. And I said, okay. So we went to this meeting. When we arrived there, I sat in that car. And he says, come on, let's go in. I said, no. Them people might reject me, man, knowing where I came from and what I've done. Yeah. And they said, no, no, come on in, God damn it. And I said, no, I'm going to stay here. You go ahead, I'll wait for you. And I was sitting there in that car. He said, okay. And he took off, went in the meeting. And I was sitting in that goddamn car. And I got to thinking, this is Bakersfield. The only ID I got is what I got here in my hand that I just got out of the joint today. I don't know who this car belongs to, and if it don't belong to Carl. Yeah. So I got to thinking about it, you know, and I'm an old convict, man, and you know, that meeting looked better and better. Because I didn't know how to explain all this shit to one of them cops. See? Oh, yeah, I just got out of the penitentiary. No, I'm just sitting here waiting for a buddy of mine to come out of AA. You know, it didn't even sound good to me. You know? So I got up and I went in there. And I'm glad that I did. I'm glad that I did. I'm glad that the fear of going to jail got greater than the fear of going into that meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I walked in there. And it's a lot of people just like what's here tonight who do hospital and institutional work. Only they were from Bakersfield. And they all knew me and everything. And they welcomed me home. Then Bill Honeycutt come and got me and took me to Long Beach and started taking me to meetings. You know, I was sitting here tonight and I was listening to some people sniveling about going to meetings all the time. I want to tell you that my first 90 days on the street, I didn't know there wasn't anything but meetings. I asked him one night, I said, Bill, how about us just going to a movie instead of going to that meeting? He said, that's cool, you can go. He said, next time you feel like taking a drink, go to a fucking movie. See, God put the right people in my life when I first came out of the penitentiary. Because I was a hard-headed son of a bitch, man. And everybody that was in my life when I came out of the penitentiary was them old, crabby-ass old-timers. You know? I'd be sitting in a meeting, and I'd be sitting between two of them, and there'd be one behind me and one in front of me. And I'd start to raise my hand when they'd ask a question, and they'd say, shut up. And I said, what do you mean, shut up? And they'd say, that question's about sobriety. And you don't know nothing about sobriety. So shut up. Then they'd tell me the good one. If your lips are moving, you're lying. They used to just bust it off of me every goddamn time, man. They'd take me to the meeting after the meeting, you know, at the restaurants, and they'd make me sit in the middle. You know, I don't like sitting in the middle. I don't do it today. But I used to sit in the middle of all these assholes, and they wouldn't let me share. And I told them one time, I said, why can't I say something? They said, because you don't know nothing. the hell are you going to tell us?
Yeah.
Said, if maybe, just maybe, if you keep your goddamn mouth shut, you'll learn something. I tried that on one of my babies here a while back. I haven't seen him since. Yeah. I guess he wasn't as ready as I was. All that stuff. When I first got sober and out here and I got a job, I got my first job. I want to tell you, the first place that I applied to a job was in a parts store. And I didn't fill out the application. I said, let me just see the manager or the guy that's in charge. And they said, well, you got to fill. I said, no, let me just see the guy because ain't no sense in me wasting all this time. And so they let me see this guy, and I walked back into his office, and we sat down there, and we were talking, and I told him where I'd come from and what I'd been and all that stuff. And his eyes got big, and his mouth flew open, and when I got done talking to him, he said, well, son, he said, I'd love to have you working here, but he said, we handle a lot of money here, and I don't know if I can trust you. I said, man, I'm not here to steal your goddamn money. I'm here asking you for a job. If I was here to steal your money, I wouldn't be asking you for a job. It just, you know, I couldn't get it straight in my mind. So I had a hard time, and then finally there was a guy in a program gave me a job, and he said, you can come to work for me, Sonny. And I said, okay, what am I going to do? And he said, well, I'll show you when we get out there tomorrow. I had a real bad feeling about all that shit. And so what he taught me was that how to dig ditches and lay water lines. I thought, man, why don't you just get a goddamn tractor to do this? He said, no, because I got two or three of you guys to do it. And I used to stand in them ditches, man, that they were higher than my head. And that sand running down on your neck and on your body, and it's sweating. And I'm thinking, what the fuck, man? It wasn't like this in the joint. It wasn't this bad in the joint. Like this. I'd throw that shovel down and start out of that hole, and I said, well, wait a minute now. Let me think about this again. Then on Fridays, I'd go home, take a shower and all that stuff, and give my check to Bill or whoever was there, and they would give me $10. And I'd say, well, wait a minute, man, I need some more money. And it's, no, if you need more money, come to us and tell us what it's for, and we'll take care of it. I said, okay. So I never got to see my checks for a year. They kept taking my money. And I kept praying the son of a bitches didn't get drunk. If they got drunk, my money's gone. And then I'm going to be really pissed off. And at the end of the year, they came and got me, took me to the bank, gave me my bank book and all that stuff, and gave me the money that I'd been giving them. And then they took me down to buy my first car. And they signed for me to get my first car. And that's how I was raised in this program. Yeah. That's how I was raised in this program. I thank God for the old timers. Thank God for the old timers. I just get so tired of listening to their shit.
Yeah.
But you know what? They never lied to me. Not one time did they ever lie to me, man. They always told me the truth. My last sponsor just died a while back. He had 45 years in the program. He's a 6'5" Jew. Never rode a motorcycle, never been to prison, none of that shit. And people used to tell me, Sonny, why did you get that dude? I said, well, I don't need nobody to teach me how to ride a motorcycle. I know. You can tell by the way I walk. I didn't need nobody to tell me how to go to goddamn penitentiary, because any fool can go to penitentiary. What I needed was somebody that had been out here, knew how to live out here. And that's why I asked him to be my sponsor. You know, and that, he was a big old roughshod Jew, man. But, you know, he used to walk up to me and put his arm around me and talk to me. And he cried with me and all that shit. And, you know, when I got into the steps, working the steps, I got up to step 8 and 9. And I got to thinking, man, how in the hell am I going to make amends for this murder? You know, and I went to him and I told him. And he said, I don't know, Sonny, because I've never come up to this before. But he said, I'm going to tell you what we're going to do. He said, I'll find out, and I'll get back to you. And I said, okay. About a month or so later, he came up to me, and he said, here. He gave me an address. He said, go here Friday. Leave early in the day and get out there. And I said, okay. And You tell them that you're volunteering out there. And so I went out there, and what it was I went to Child Help USA in Beaumont Bay. And I worked with abused kids. And I got a chance to work with them kids, and I checked their attitudes, and their attitudes was just as shitty as mine. Yeah. And I worked with this one boy for a long time who had been locked up in a closet. And it got to the point where he finally would be sitting on the front steps. He knew exactly when I was coming out there, and he'd be sitting on the front steps. He used to kick me and throw rocks at me and shit like that. You know, I used to do the same thing with him. And gave me one weekend to go out and play with the kids, man. And I loved it. And eventually it got to the point where I had him, where I teached him how to ride a horse. And these people who adopted him came out there this one weekend, and I was out there already, and he was out riding a horse. And when he came in from riding a horse, he stood up in the saddle, and I told him, I said, "Sit down." And he said, "No." I said, "Sit down, you're going to fall." And he said, "That's all right, if I fall, you'll catch me." I said, "No, what makes you think so?" "I let you let you fall on the goddamn ground, man." And he said, "No, you won't." And he jumped off that saddle. And I caught him, he threw his arms around me. And he told me, he says, "You know what, Sonny, I love you." And I knew that everything was all right. I don't know what that means to you, but it meant a hell of a lot to me. Because if somebody could come through what he just had come through, then I could get through anything that I had to go through. And that's the way it's been for me since I've been in this program. You know, I remember, God, I can't even remember what year it was. We were talking about it earlier. I spoke at the first CA convention in Palm Springs. And there was a guy who spoke on Saturday night, and I spoke on Sunday morning. And I was glad I spoke on Sunday morning, because I laid out by the pool with all the hard bodies all weekend. And got up there and told my story and what I had heard. And this guy that had spoke was talking about how his parents made him wear tight shoes, and he thought that was probably why he was an alcoholic. I got up there Sunday morning and told him, I said, "If the fucking shoes were so tight, why didn't you take them off?" Somebody asked me, said, "Sonny, did you come from a dysfunctional family?" No, when I left home, my parents were fine. See, I'm not a victim anymore. I'm not a victim any goddamn more. What a freedom that is. What a freedom that is. I went to my sponsor. My sponsor told me one time, "Why don't you quit trying to please everybody?" I said, "Am I doing that?" And he said, "Yeah." He said, "Don't you know that what other people think of you ain't none of your goddamn business? It's what you think of you. Because when the day is all over, all these people ain't with you when you lay your head down on the pillow. It's all between you and God. And if you're right with you, and you're right with God, you're going to get a night's sleep. Don't make no difference what all them other goddamn people think. You can't please everybody." Yeah. And so I said, "Thank God." About 10 years ago, I got asked to speak at down on South Figueroa. And when I walked in that club, I parked outside, and they showed me where to park, and I got out and walked in there, and the only thing white in there was me and the styrofoam cup. And I thought, "God damn, all right. You know better than me, guy." So I went in there, and I was getting a cup of coffee, and this black guy walked up to me, and he said, "Are you Sonny?" And I said, "Yeah." And I thought he was secretary. And he said, "Do you remember me?" I said, "No, should I?" And he said, "Yeah." And he pulled the collar of his shirt down. There was a big scar down his neck. So I threw the coffee down on the floor, and I said, "What do you want to do?"
Shit, I was ready. Drop the soap, any fucking thing. And he said, I'm taking a cake for 7 years tonight, and I want to know if you'll give it to me. Today, me and that dude is real good friends. I was the best man at his wedding a couple years ago. And you know what it proves to me? Is that when I was in the penitentiary, I lived in another world. Out here in Alcoholics Anonymous, CA, ANA, all this shit, I'm in another world. I'm in a world that I should have been all along. Because today I am somebody. You see, today I am somebody. Everybody in this room is somebody. See, you didn't get here by choice or happenstance. God brought every one of us to this room. Brought us all here. It don't make no goddamn difference what we're driving out there, what we're wearing in here. It put every one of our asses in these chairs. See? And we're in here for the same cause, and that's to stay clean and sober. You know? I speak a lot throughout the country. I get a real good opportunity to go into a lot of penitentiaries. And I went into Huntsville Penitentiary down in Texas. I want to tell you that that's probably the spookiest goddamn penitentiary in the world, boy. Woo! Man, they got some tough suckers in there. They got some tough acting bulls in there, too. And the warden had come and sent a helicopter to pick me up to bring me in there. And I went in there and I was up at a podium like this in a big, huge mess hall. And everybody sitting out there was in white. And right down front here, taking up two chairs, was the biggest, blackest dude I had ever seen in my life. He must have weighed, he must have been 7 foot tall and weighed 500 pounds. That's a big dude. And when I looked at him, I kept looking at him, and he had some chains on him, boy. He had some chains on him. And he was in there for multiple murders. And I never did find out how many murders exactly. But there was quite a few. And they had brought him out of lockup and brought him in there to sit and listen. And as I was sharing my story with them convicts, I happened to look down at him because he was an awesome sight, just an awesome sight. And there was tears running down his cheeks. And I saw then, at that moment, the same thing that I felt in the penitentiary when people came in there to carry the message. The same goddamn thing that every one of us here tonight felt or got in contact with when coming to these meetings. And that's hope. That's hope. And after the thing was all over with, I was standing there with the warden and a bunch of other people, and we were talking, and he came shuffling over there, and the warden says, he wants to talk to you, Sonny. Is it all right? And I said, hell yeah. And he asked me if I could give him a, if he could hug me. And I said, sure, man, as long as you don't play with my butt, it's all right. And he gave me a big old hug, and his tears were there, and then he said, can I write you? I said, yeah. If it's okay with the warden, no problem. So he started writing to me. And then the warden started letting him call me. And he'd done his steps through the mail. He wrote his first step, sent it to me, and I made some comments and sent it back. Second step, third step. And then I was going to Amarillo, Texas to speak at a convention down there, and he found out and he said, will you come by the joint? I said, why? He said, I finished my fourth step and I want to take my fifth step with you. And I said, sure. By then, I'd been in there 4 or 5 times. And before I got there, I was in Amarillo and I was in a hotel, and the phone rang and I picked it up, and it was the warden from the penitentiary. And he said, Sonny, he said, we still want you to come down here, but I want to tell you that this dude just got killed. He got killed in a race riot. And I thought, oh, shit, man. You know, that always does something to me on the inside. Because I know it's all about bullshit. It ain't about nothing in reality. And so I went down there to the joint, and after I got done talking to the guys and stuff, I went up to the warden's office, and he said, this guy's, here's all of his papers. And he wanted you to have them. And so I opened them up and I began to read some of them. And all of a sudden there was his fourth step. And I sat there and I read it. And I didn't cry. I smiled. And he looked at the warden, looked at me and said, "Sonny, what are you smiling about?" I said, "This dude died free, man. He died free." He said, no, he died in here." I said, "You won't understand because you're not a member of this program. But everybody in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, Cocaine Anonymous, or Narcotics Anonymous understands that that man died free. Because that's what happens in the fourth step. Getting all rid of all that goddamn garbage sets us free." See, and that's what he done. You know. And now every time I go back to Texas, I stop and I see his mother and his brother. And every time I go down there, they take me out to dinner. You know, and I try to pay for it and they won't let me pay for it. You know, they think I done something for their son. And I didn't do it. God did through me. See? The type of people that are in my life today are people that are involved in Alcoholics Anonymous, Cocaine Anonymous, or Narcotics Anonymous. You know? Not the people who sit around on the peripheral and think it's going to rub off on them. You know? It don't happen that way. You know? I went back to Tehachapi for 8.5 years. I had a goddamn panel up there for 8.5 years once a month. You know? And then all of a sudden they put me on this goddamn circuit to speak, and it changed. You know? But I go back up there every chance that I get. I go into penitentiaries all over the country. You know, I've been into Attica. I've been into a whole lot of penitentiaries. Yeah. And every time somebody calls me and asks me if I'll come and speak at an H&I function, I'm there. Because H&I is what saved my life. H&I is what brought me here. If it wasn't for H&I and people like you going into them penitentiaries and shit, carrying the message, I'd have never heard it. I would have never, ever heard it. Because I know when I was on the street, I never stopped long enough to find out where there was an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. Wasn't interested in it. God had to put me in a penitentiary and get me quiet and in a goddamn meeting to where I could learn that there was Alcoholics Anonymous. I remember when Cocaine Anonymous first got started over in California. Yeah. I remember when NA wrote their basic text. I was sitting in the room with all the other assholes that was trying to figure out what to do with it. And everybody was on an ego trip. Everybody wanted their story in it. And they said, "Sonny, what about you? You going to put your story in here?" And I said, "Hell no. No, I'll see you guys later." And I got up and walked out. See? I know a lot of things, you know, but I think the biggest thing that's ever happened to me, and I was sharing it with my friend, was that I got an invitation to speak at Founders Day. And that was probably the biggest thing that's ever happened to me. Yeah. And I got a chance to go to Akron, Ohio. And speak back there. And to go into the actual house where they sat and drank coffee, sat at the table where they sat and drank coffee and tried 12-stepping everybody and all that shit. And that was probably the biggest thing that's ever happened to me since I've been in this program. Now, I want to tell you that while I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous, when I first came out of the joint, they told me, said, "Sonny, leave the women alone." Now, I've been down a long time. And they told me to leave the women alone. I said, "You got to be out of your goddamn mind." It's like taking a kid to the candy store and telling him you can look, but you can't have. And so then they said, "You got to do this for at least a year." And I thought, "Well, shit, I just did. You know, I got a year in the joint. I got a year of sobriety in the joint." And so I went after it. And I was like in hog heaven. God damn, boy. I didn't know they had so many women. So little time. And then one day I was sitting in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and I looked around and I saw this guy with his wife and his kid. And I said, "Oh shit, man. That's what I need. That'll keep me sober." So I found a broad that had a kid. we immediately fell in love. And we got married. And I had all my partners there. I want to tell you what it was like. We went to get fitted for tuxes. And these are all old scooter tramps. And because I thought they should be there if I had to be there. And the tux shop that we went into, the guys that owned it were gay. And so we were chasing them around in there. We had them down to their shorts and shit. And we were just having a good time. We were just having a real good time. And the girl that I was engaged to decided to drop by. And she didn't appreciate none of that. So at the wedding, the guys wore the tuxes, but they wore tennis shoes. One red one, one white one, all that kind of shit. It was just one of those things that should have never happened. You know, and it only lasted 7 months. And I walked away from that. A couple years later, I was in an H&I meeting. I looked across the room, and I saw this girl, and she was smiling at me. So I smiled back, and I knew it was God's will. So I went up to her afterwards and asked her if she wanted to go have coffee. You know how that is. Who in the hell wants to have coffee? So I asked her if she wanted to have coffee, and she said, yeah, and that just blew my mind. So we went to have coffee afterwards, and then we started dating, whatever that is. That's when we moved in together. And so her sponsor said she couldn't get married for at least a year. She had to know me for a year. So it lasted 9 months, and then that was as close to a year as we got. And then we had a big Catholic wedding. And I had to go sit down with this Catholic priest and her. And he asked her what kind of Catholic she was, and she told him. He looked at me and he said, what are you, sonny? I said, I'm an alcoholic and an addict, and if I got to be anything other than that, fuck it. Let me get out of here. Yeah. And it was a trip because it was Father Terry who's in the program. And he looked at me and he said, no, sonny. He said, all you're here for is for me to teach you how to live with a practicing Catholic. Well, the information he gave me wasn't too good. One Saturday afternoon, I was sitting watching football, and there was a good game on, and it was a real critical game. And I'm sitting there on the edge of the chair checking it out, man, and she walked in and turned the TV off. So I got up and walked out, got my car and left. I haven't been back since. And she asked me one time a couple years ago why I never came back. It's because I didn't want to go to the penitentiary again. Since then, I've been single. I've learned how to date. I got a lot of women friends in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and Cocaine Anonymous. And it's been real, real good. I'm learning about me and something about women. Not very goddamn much, but something. Yeah. And this friend of mine just had her 17th birthday. I've known her for a long time, and she's a real, real sweetheart. And I went to the florist and got her a dozen of long-stem yellow roses. And had them put it in a box and fix it up all that nice and all that shit. And I took them to her. And she opened the box up and stood there and started crying. You know. I said, what the fuck are you crying about, man? Them roses cost a lot of money. And she said, you just blew my mind. I never expected you to give me roses. I said, well, cool. I got over on one. Tell you a story about getting my hair cut. Bill Honeycutt told me, said, Sonny, if you don't get your hair cut, you're going to get drunk. Now I looked at that little fat bastard and I thought, what the hell are you talking about, man? But see, I was new out here and I didn't know. I knew he knew more than I did. So I said, okay, I'll get it cut. So he took me to this woman's beauty salon to get my hair cut. I want to tell you, coming from where I come from, you don't go to those places to get your hair done. And when I saw the broad that had volunteered to cut my hair, I knew why she volunteered. She was jealous. She didn't have no goddamn hair, man. I know men that had longer hair than what she had. And she's gonna volunteer to cut my goddamn hair. I could almost sit on my hair. So she cut it off. And Bill said, while you're up there, you might as well let her do that beard. And I thought, what the fuck are you talking about? He said, yeah, if you don't, you're gonna get drunk. So I said, all right. So she cut my beard off. And I felt almost naked when I got out of that chair. Yeah. Because I'd had that hair for a long time. And a couple of years later, I'm a real slow learner. A couple of years later, I was sitting in a meeting, and Bill was sitting on this side of me, and I'm sitting here, and the speaker was speaking. And I'm sitting there thinking and thinking and thinking, and all of a sudden it dawned on me what had happened. You see? It dawned on me what he had done to me. See? It wasn't about me drinking or not drinking. It was he made me get rid of that mask. And when I got rid of the hair and I got rid of the goddamn beard, what had happened was there was just Sonny, and I had to deal with Sonny then. See? And those are the kind of people that God put in my life when I first got sober. And I'm so grateful for them people. They taught me so much. Yeah. Bill used to tell me, he said, Sonny, this is the program where it's the language of the heart. It's where the heart speaks and where the heart listens. I said, what's this shit? I didn't understand that then. Today I do. I can sit in a meeting and listen to somebody share, and I know when they're talking about from the heart. Because I can feel it. Yeah. And then I used to tell him, man, there's some real assholes in this program. And he said, no, Sonny, there ain't no such thing as assholes in this program. And I said, what are you talking about? So-and-so did blah, blah, blah. He said, no. He said, there's only two kinds of people in the program. And I said, what's that? And he said, there's the kind of people who know and the kind of people who don't know. Okay? And you've been running into a whole lot of people that don't know. Yeah. And so I've started to taking that in. As I take that in, I began to realize, man, that, you know, Jesus Christ, you know, the way I used to look at things is sure a lot different. There was a woman named Ruth M., who passed away, Ruth Mathis, and she had been a circuit speaker. And we're sitting in a restaurant one night, and this waitress kept coming by the table, and every time she came by, she smiled at me, and I smiled back. And I told Ruth, I said, man, there's God's will for me, Ruth. She said, who? I said, that waitress. And she said, son, what makes you think God's a pimp? So I quit looking for God's will. You know. My life has just been real, real good. I was in the hospital here a while back. I had congestive heart failure. And they had me in ICU for 6 days. And while I was in ICU, everybody was coming to the hospital to see me, all my friends. And this nurse walked into the ICU room that I was in, and she said, Sonny, she said, I can understand you having a large family, but this is goddamn ridiculous. You know, everybody's coming up there saying they were my brothers, my sister. Said, it looks like the United Nations coming in here. And she said, this really ain't your family, is it? And I said, yes, it is. It really is. See? I said, I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And these are my brothers and sisters who are coming in here seeing me. Just that simple. And she says, oh, okay. But we can only let two in at a time, and then we've got to back up. Yeah. And it was a trip. Just to know that that many people care that goddamn much. Yeah. Just care that much. You know, I love this program. I love God. I love what God's done with my life today. Yeah. The places He lets me go. Yeah, places He lets me go, people He lets me meet. It's just fantastic. Next weekend I'm going to be down in San Diego at a convention that is the best convention in the world. It's called Sober Singles Convention. This girl said, "Sonny, can I go with you?" And I said, "No." And she said, "Why not?" And I said, "It'd be like taking sand to the beach." See, I'm one of them assholes I was talking about. You know, but I love it, man. I love it. I went and spoke at East Texas. East Texas Annual Roundup. And I got there and I never seen so goddamn many rednecks in my life. But you know what? They just opened up to me there. And I love it over there. I love going to Texas. The best part of it is I love leaving Texas. My life is just really good. It's just really good. And I'm glad that I had the opportunity to come over here and share a little bit of Sonny with you guys tonight. I'm glad that you had me over here. And I guess you ain't going to get enough of me this time, because goddamn, man, I'm in book for next year over here too. So, you know, if you're new here tonight, or nearly new, I'd like to share three things with you. And then I'm going to sit down. And those three things are, if you don't drink, you don't use, and you don't run, no matter what comes down the pike, you don't have to ever go back where you come from. Thank you.